everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy John, engineering and producing the show. Is the flood over? John, I'll tell you, it felt like we were getting ready to get the Ark out here at the station. They've had a lot of rain in the last hour. Things letting up. It's Tuesday, October the 4th, 2022. The Buckmaster Show, broadcasting from the Green Things Zocalo Village studio, the radio station, 1030 KVOI, The Voice, worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. Have a lot of programs going all the way back to 2011. The Buckmaster Show live line when we present our telephone interviews, which we will do here in momentarily, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go now on the live line to Dr. Reverend Robin Hoover, a social ethicist who has worked with migrating people along the southwest border for 33 years, a native of West Texas. Dr. Hoover has founded and led several nonprofits, including Humane Borders here in southern Arizona. He writes about that effort in his book, Creating Humane Borders. Dr. Hoover is the 2006 recipient of Mexico's National Human Rights Award, bestowed by then-President Felipe Calderon. Reverend Hoover was a longtime Tucson resident. About a year ago, he moved over to New Mexico, and he joins us now on the live line from Albuquerque. Reverend Hoover, has the Balloon Festival started over there?
Oh, we had a great ascension on Saturday. Hundreds of balloons went up at the same time. It was awesome.
It's a great time of year. You know, that event started, think, about 25 years ago. Basically, it was kind of a one-weekend deal, and they've now, it's a huge tourism thing that I think they've expanded to 10 days, so it's a big deal.
It really is, and it's a sight to see.
All right, Reverend Hoover, Governor DeSantis of Florida, a Republican, of course, created a firestorm late last month when he put about 50 migrants, mostly from Venezuela, on two planes that took them to Martha's Vineyard, the liberal and upscale vacation spot in Massachusetts. He was following the lead of another very conservative government, governor in Texas, Governor Abbott. Also a Republican, sending migrants to progressive strongholds. Has this strategy, first of all, what's your take on the strategy, and is it kind of backfiring from the original intent that these conservative Republicans were hoping for?
Well, I joined with just all the migrant organizations and activists, immigration attorneys, a lot of Democratic politicians, and even law enforcement denouncing this. It's insane. It's a lot like the reverse freedom rides back in 1962, where they were loading people, black people, up and sending them to the north with all kinds of promises and nothing waiting for them on the other end. So it's a horrible, horrible practice, and it has backfired on the original political intent of doing this in many respects. But I will agree, we got a horrible situation on the border, and something has to be done.
How do they, those that are put on these flights or these buses, how are they faring, those that take the free ride? What's your take on when they get to these destinations? They're getting some warm welcomes, aren't they, Reverend Hoover?
Yes, they are. It's a double-sided thing, because when they rounded up a whole bunch of people in San Antonio and made all these promises of housing and jobs and clothes and just all kinds of promises, and then took them up there, they weren't ready for them. There was no coordination. There was no welcoming committee or anything of that sort. On the other hand, there's been incredible, surprising benefits of this, because they've gotten, the result is that migrants have gotten away from their smugglers. They're getting free rides to places that are frequently closer to their families. They're in locations where they're more likely to receive asylum. The states vary dramatically, even though it's a federal agency, as to the practice of providing asylum benefits. So if you get to New York, for instance, and you get an asylum case, you're about 80% guaranteed that you're going to get it. And that's certainly not true in Arizona or Texas. So there's been some strange benefits to all of this.
So once these Venezuelans cross the Rio Grande to Texas, they turn themselves in, Reverend Hoover, to the Border Patrol and then often request asylum. So they claim in court that they need the asylum because of the Venezuelan government retaliates against people who do not support the government. So what happens to the people if they're suddenly put on a bus and they've got court hearings in Texas or wherever? Can those court hearings transfer? And I'm hearing you're saying that if they were transferring to, say, New York, they've got a lot better chance of getting the asylum than in your state, home state of Texas.
It is a mixed bag because if you've already received papers to appear at such and such location, it's going to be much more complicated to transfer to a different venue because you've been moved. But there's a raft of attorneys out there helping clear that up. And yes, you are much more likely to receive asylum if you go to a northern state. So it's a mixed bag. It makes it more complicated. It may make it a little bit longer, but the chances are you're still going to get asylum if you get north.
The problem that the Republican governors are trying to expose, first of all, what is the problem and how do we, what's the Reverend Dr. Robin Hoover solution to this, what some would say, a crisis?
Well, I want to first of all say it's always been a federal issue. It has been for the four decades I've been working in this stuff, and I've not been impressed with the Biden administration. They increased Title 42 stuff that excludes people based on health, COVID, that sort of stuff. They're building more walls. They're dumping people out on the streets without coordinating with locals. They're increased expedited removals. They're trying to get as many people out of here as possible. It's rather cruel. But to answer your question, what could we do? We could be prosecuting these people that are rounding people up and busing them. We could clamp down on common carriers like planes and buses and prohibit that behavior. We could demand that Customs and Border Protection sectors work with the locals. I mean, the Department of Homeland Security has 160,000 employees. I think they could assign a few folks to make phone calls to Casa Alitas in Tucson and similar organizations all across the United States and don't just dump people out at bus stations. It's ridiculous. But most important, they could have some new legislation that would do something about the status of people who are already here undocumented, guarantee the right of asylum, reaffirm that some of those laws that were passed as early as in the 40s, and they could do something about increasing the number of legal avenues to come here and work and participate in our economy. So I want to just say one thing. The Biden administration has been mute on these issues. They just really have not spoken out. And they need, if they're going to be in the game, they need to play the game.
There has been a decrease. I see here, this was in the Arizona Daily Star, migrant deaths in the Arizona desert declined, even though arrests were up. And for years, you're very passionate about trying to get the word to in Mexico to people that were going to be crossing about the dangers. Do you think some of that is getting through that message, Dr. Hoover?
Well, yes, the message is getting out there, but what we've seen is a huge change in the early 2000s. Over 75% of the people that were crossing were Mexican nationals. And today, more than 75% are other than Mexican. And almost all of those people have been briefed somewhere along the way that they can apply for asylum. And so a lot of them are, you know, presenting in large groups, and they're not crossing the desert. They're just turning themselves in as soon as they have an encounter with Border Patrol. So if we were seeing the same kinds of numbers of Mexican nationals crossing, we would still see the same number of deaths in the desert. But thank God that's the chemistry, the equation there is mixture has changed.
All right, Reverend Dr. Robin Hoover on the live line with us from Albuquerque, New Mexico. Always a pleasure. Reverend Hoover, thank you for a good conversation.
Thank you, sir.
All right, Reverend Hoover with us from the live line, brought to us by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Let's talk a little bit about Mona's Danish Bakery before we turn it over to Shelley Fishman, who is very happy today. He's actually given me a couple of thumbs up, and if he had three, he'd probably give me three thumbs up. And I'll give both my thumbs up to Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Bakery. We love Mona's. Northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, they are open 6:30 Tuesday through Saturday. That means they opened the doors, and I'm sure there were people waiting this morning at 6:30. Their website's monasdanishbakery.com. They're revamping the website. It's going to look even better with all those tempting photographs of the stuff that people come to Mona's for. Beautiful pastries like the Danish Kringle. Open right now for lunch, northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise. More with Shelley Fishman besides his thumbs up. What is going on with the market? And I'm saying that in a much more positive tone than I normally do on Tuesday. We'll be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
This is Kate Delaney. Tune in later tonight as we talk about everything that happened throughout your day. Tonight at 10 on 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
Shelley Fishman is a financial consultant in private practice in Tucson, Arizona. The views expressed during this segment are his own and don't necessarily represent those of this station or of Bill Buckmaster Communications. Contact Shelley through buckmastershow.com or at shelleyfishman.com.
Shelly's got a big smile on his face. I don't blame him. Shelly, how are you?
Oh, I'm great today, Bill.
Yeah,
how are
you're
you?
All hyped up. And you don't even eat sugary cereal. Anyway, when I saw over 700 points yesterday, I'm thinking, okay, that's wonderful, but tomorrow, this is when I was looking at it yesterday, I thought, oh, well, tomorrow's Tuesday, and tomorrow with Shelley, I wonder if we're going the other way, but unusually, 2 days in a row.
Yeah, the market opened around 700 points higher and has stayed that way all day.
Even at 12:15
Even
Pacific.
Even at 12:15 on Tuesday when Shelley Fishman and Bill Buckmaster are talking.
And that's why I asked you right before we went on, gee, I hope the market doesn't taking a big tumble, but no, we may go up then for 2 days, 1,400, 1,500 points.
Right. But, you know, we had what I can describe as a rotten week last week.
Oh, yeah.
So we've got a lot to recover from. But, you know, a couple of things happened with the market getting down in the 28,000, 29,000 range. First of all, the interest rate hikes that the Fed has been doing here in this country have positioned the dollar internationally against foreign currencies such that the dollar is so high now that it is discouraging us from exporting. So companies have started to cut back because they understand that if the dollar stays very high, it will discourage exports.
It prices a lot of folks out of the market.
Exactly. Yeah. However, what it does is it encourages imports.
Yep.
So to the extent that you're trying to bring industry back to this country in order to reduce your dependence on foreign goods and services, that works at odds with the objective. The other thing that happened is the Brits have a new prime minister, and she's a conservative. And they announced almost, you know, a day or two after taking office that they were going to reduce taxes at the upper brackets of British income earners. That's called trickle down. Mm. You know, you reduce the taxes for highest earners in the hope that those people will then invest more in the economy. Well, that didn't work for Reagan in the 80s. And, you know, it didn't work for Bush in the 2000s.
Didn't he call it voodoo economics?
Actually, H.W. Bush, Bush's father.
Okay. I knew it was one of the Bushes.
Yeah, who was the vice president to Reagan, scratched his head and said, this is voodoo economics. Mm-hmm. It is voodoo economics. It doesn't work. In fact, interestingly, once, you know, I kind of was talking about what we're going to talking about today, I checked the Arizona the Star, and Robert Reich has an article in today's Star, Three Myths Used by the Ultra Wealthy, and he's talking mostly here about income inequality, but, you know, one of the myths he really talks about is trickle-down economics. He calls it something, can I repeat the word he uses? Let's call it garbage.
Garbage. Okay.
And he's right. It is garbage. Because it's never worked. We've got now 70 years past the end of World War II. Every time it's been tried, it hasn't worked. And so anyway, the Brits, the pound really took a hit against most other currencies. And over the weekend, the new British prime minister was forced to say, nah, I guess we're not going to do that. The markets worldwide, but certainly here in the United States, yesterday reacted with tremendous optimism, said, good, maybe we can stabilize the way currencies are acting with each other, and maybe the central banks will take a look at that and be a little less aggressive going forward in how they're trying to control inflation by raising interest rates. And so the markets went up yesterday here in the States, the Dow about 750 points, and today around the same amount. And that's all very good news for investors. Now, we're still in bearish territory. We're still down from highs at around 38,000, so we're now at around 30,000.
That's like 8,000.
Yeah. It's a lot of points, Bill. Mm-hmm. But if we have in fact hit bottom, and in fact we're going to see some inflation numbers later this week, we're going to see some GDP numbers next week, we're going to see some numbers that will tell us how the Fed strategy so far is working to reduce the inflationary pressures on the economy. And if the Fed then comes back and says, we're happy with these numbers, we're going to back off a little bit in the next go-around or two, I think the market will continue to like that news.
Are we at the bottom?
We are. I don't have a crystal ball with me.
I know you don't. You left it at home.
It floated away in the big flood this morning. But, so I don't know whether
It feel kind of like it?
Well, let me tell you why it feels like we may have hit bottom last week. One of the technical analysis tools that's used to measure whether a market is overbought or oversold is called the price-to-earnings ratio. And we have, you and I have talked about this on this show. When the market was, you know, up at around 38,000, the price-to-earnings ratio was way above the 10-year average of where price-to-earnings ratios usually are. That average, I'm going to round these numbers, Bill, so don't hold me to them to the decimal point, is for a 10-year average around 18. In other words, prices are about 18 times earnings. And when I say prices, I mean market prices for the securities. We were at 23. So we were significantly higher than the 10-year forward-looking average. Today, we're at around 15. So we're significantly lower. Now, anytime you use historical averages to take a look at what they're going to, how they're going to affect performance in the marketplace, you always have to caveat that with in an average year, this is what you know you might expect to see. The problem is this isn't an average year.
No.
It's not an average market. It's not an average economy.
It's an anomaly year.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So using historical reference points to say where things are going is you know a very dangerous thing to do. Putting that danger aside for a second, I believe that once it became clear that we were several points below historical averages, that exerted some upward pressure on the markets. And that's why I think, in part, why we saw yesterday what we did and seeing it today. And there's, again, nothing in the news that I could see that would reverse that trend except, you know, 1,500 points in 2 days is a lot. So, you know, we'll see some, you know, some corrections and some hedging tomorrow and maybe for the rest of the week. But again, I'd like to see this market by election day get back to around 33,000, and then the market can judge the results of the elections and do it in a way that isn't either overbought or oversold.
Yeah. Now, the big word, I'll throw it out there for you, it's inflation. That's more than one word. Inflation. And the next report about inflation will be so important because the way this market has reacted this year, if there's anything that's bad news with inflation, look out.
Well, that's right.
We could really use the next, I don't know what the next report that's coming out, but we could really use something that says inflation has slowed down.
And it has slowed down. Yeah. It slowed down at the retail level and it slowed down at the wholesale level. It just didn't slow down enough. And so I think what we're going to see, and I think the numbers come out Friday, don't quote me on that. I should have looked it up, and I didn't before the show. When the inflation numbers come out, if they're showing a reduction in the third quarter from where we were in the second and the first quarters, I think the Fed could use that as an excuse to back off. And instead of doing another three quarters of a point, maybe do a quarter of a point or a half point. The markets will love that. If, on the other hand, the inflation is showing that we're not making the progress that we thought we were making, it would be very difficult for Jay Powell and the Fed to all of a sudden change their rules and say, nah, we're not concerned now. We were concerned last week, but not next week. So I'm hoping that, in fact, the inflation numbers will, you know, it's not going to stop inflation. There's not going to be no inflation. But if we can come down a couple of a tenths of a point, I think that will give the Fed some breathing room. It will also potentially give the European central bankers some breathing room. And we could see maybe that they'll ease off a little bit and say, let's take a look at what's happening, see if what we've done over the past couple of months is working, and go from there.
Okay. It's just nice to know we've had a couple of very positive days.
Yes.
Trying to make up a lot of loss.
Can I do a little plug for next Tuesday?
Oh, please
do. We've got Jonathan Rothschild on for the entire hour.
Former Mayor Jonathan Rothschild comes in.
And we're going to talk about, of course, what's coming up in November.
Mm-hmm. And Shelley will be one of our guest hosts next week, taking a little time off. So we will look forward to that, Shell, 1 week from today. We'll be right back on the Buckmaster Show.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We've been talking now for a little over a week about Green Things and the parking lot sale. It's still going on, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. 13-acre site, home also to Zocalo and all that great merchandise from Mexico, beautifully handcrafted material, and some fabulous Talavera pottery from Mexico. GreenThingsAZ.com and ZocaloVillage.com. Those are the two websites that are open daily. Green Things in business here in Tucson for over 50 years. Let's go now on the live line. Our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Tom Horn joins us. Mr. Horn served as the 25th Arizona Attorney General from 2011 to 2015. He previously served as the Arizona Superintendent of Public Instruction for two terms from 2003 to 2011. And now Mr. Horn is on the ballot representing the Republican Party, looking to return to the office of Superintendent of Public Instruction. Tom Horn, how are you?
I'm great, Bill. And, you know, having been Attorney General and now running for superintendent again, my friends tell me I'm going backwards. But my response to them is that the big problem's in the schools, and that's what I want to work on.
Well, everywhere I see your signs here in town, I see this stop critical race theory. And some of these teachers are rejecting the argument, saying that we're not teaching CRT in their classrooms. What do you say?
Well, some of them probably aren't, but some are. I have a list of 200 teachers that at the National Teachers Union Convention signed statements saying that if we prohibited teaching critical race theory, they would defy the law. So they wouldn't be doing that unless they were already teaching it. So sometimes when people express their opinions, we have the problem of small sampling techniques. They may not be doing it, but it's a problem around the state. Of those 200 teachers, I have a list of the 25 school districts that they come from, and it includes all of Arizona's largest districts. And Tucson has by far the largest number of teachers who signed.
Now, when you left office as schools chief in 2011, Arizona had a new law on the books pushing the elimination of CRT in the classroom, banning instruction that promoted overthrowing the U.S. government, and on and on. Whatever happened to that law, Tom Horn?
Well, the first of all, we did put a stop to what was called ethnic studies in the Tucson district, facing a cutoff of when the law was passed my last. I wrote the law. The law was passed my last year as state superintendent of schools, and it was and then as attorney general, I enforced it. And facing a cutoff of funds, Tucson did eliminate the ethnic studies program, which included critical race theory as an explicit part of its curriculum. Then the years later, the liberal Ninth Circuit said that, and one of their judges serving as a district court judge said that it was being applied unconstitutionally because I enforce it only against the Raza Studies program and not the other programs like Black Studies and Native American Studies. But the Raza Studies were the only ones that I had evidence against them. It was the only one that I'd gotten complaints on, and so you know I had a hard enough time proving the case against them. I couldn't possibly prove it against the others where I had no complaints and no evidence. Nevertheless, it was. The Ninth Circuit stopped the enforcement. Of course, this was long after I had gotten the program eliminated. People have mistakenly concluded that the law itself was declared unconstitutional, and that's not true. The law was never declared unconstitutional on its face. It was only said that it was unconstitutional the way it was applied because it was only against one of the four different ethnic studies programs. So it can still be enforced, and I would certainly enforce it.
Now, what about your opponent, Democrat Kathy Hoffman, the current sitting superintendent of public instruction in Arizona? She has accused you, Tom Horn, of using this critical race theory as a divisive catch-all phrase to attack any topic that has to do with making all students feel welcome and included in their school community. Your reaction?
Well, my belief is that we're all individuals. We're all brothers and sisters under the skin, and we're entitled to be judged as individuals. What do we know? What can we do? What is our character? What is our ability to appreciate beauty? And not what race we were born into, which is a matter of total accident. But in critical race theory, they say that race is primary, and they divide the kids into oppressors and oppressed, depending on what race they were born into. This is, you know, sometimes young kids. And so the kids that are designated as oppressors are supposed to be guilty 24 hours a day, and the ones that are designated as oppressed don't make an effort, because why try if the system is against you? This is the land of opportunity. Anyone who works hard can succeed. So what's decisive, what's divisive is that program, not the attempt to eliminate it. Now, eliminating it doesn't mean you can't teach about the horrors of slavery and Jim Crow and what happened in Oklahoma. I'm all in favor of teaching those things. And I'm in favor of prejudice reduction programs to teach kids that they must treat each other as individuals and not pay attention to race, which is, in my mind, totally irrelevant to anything that matters. But but to Kathy Hoffman and the proponents of critical race theory, race is primary. So I view this as the biggest and most important philosophical division of any statewide race in our state right now.
What about the empowerment scholarships or the vouchers? Is this going, as some advocates of public schools say, going to destroy our public school system?
No, competition is good for everybody. That's why the American system of free enterprise produces prosperity, and the Soviet Union was poor. And in fact, there are studies that show that district schools that have competition perform better than district schools who don't have competition. I think competition improves everybody, and that's true in the economy, and it's true in education as well.
So how is the campaign going, Tom Horn?
It's going great. I have 40 very dedicated volunteers. I'm very, very grateful for them. They're fabulous people, and it seems to be going very well.
So what other issues, beside the two that we have addressed, is anything else you would like to bring up before we let you go?
Well, there's only one thing that really matters, and that's how are we going to get our test scores up?
Mm-hmm.
The test scores are at the bottom of the well right now. When I left office, we had 60% proficient in math, and we had 74% proficient in reading. Now, two-thirds of the kids are not proficient in math, and 41% only are proficient in reading. So there's been a tremendous decline, and I think the decline is because I focused on academics, whereas Kathy Hoffman does not focus on academics. She focuses on other things, such as critical race theory, social-emotional learning, sexual matters, instead of focusing on academics. So what I propose to do is to focus on academics, make the department again a primarily service organization that goes out and helps the schools to improve, which is not going on now, holding districts accountable for low test scores, requiring students to pass a test to graduate from high school in order to motivate them to study harder. And all those things together, I think, will raise our test scores back to where they were the last time I was superintendent, rather than in the bottom of the well, which is where they are right now.
Okay, before we let you go, we had a listener who just sent me a message. Could Mr. Horn simply define what is critical race theory, why you're against it, and also this listener also wanted to know, would you try to ban ethnic studies again?
Yes, I would ban it again. I think we don't want to divide kids by race. In ethnic studies, they put the white kids in classroom one, the black kids in classroom two, the Latino kids in classroom three, and the Native American kids in classroom four, just exactly like the old South. I think that's wrong. I think everybody should learn together. We should learn about the contributions of all cultures to our society, but we should all do it together. We don't want to divide kids by race. I think that's totally crazy to divide kids by race, which is what ethnic studies did. I think I anticipated the needs of your caller because I did define critical race theory. It's the opposite of what I believe in. I believe we're all individuals entitled to be judged by individuals and that race is irrelevant. Critical study teaches that race is primary, divides kids by race, divides kids into so-called oppressors and oppressed, when really this is the land of opportunity and everybody can succeed if they work hard. And that's the way I define critical race theory.
All right, Tom Horn, going to let you go. What's your website?
TomHorn.com. That's TomHorne.com. Horn has an E at the end, so it's TomHorne.com. And I'd love it if your listeners would go on my website. There's a lot more detail about my views. And if they want to help out, there's a they can contribute online.
All right, Tom Horn, thanks very much.
Thank you, Bill. It's always great to be on your program.
All right. We'll take a break right here. Margaret Regan, longtime Tucson Weekly arts writer, has our arts report right after the break.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com. Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com.
Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We are also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The way we vote in Pima County is changing. Are you ready? The League of Women Voters of Greater Tucson invites you to visit ReadySetVoteTucson.com to learn about new vote centers for easier in-person voting, new voting districts, and changes to the early voting list. Get ready to vote at ReadySetVoteTucson.com. Brought to you by the League of Women Voters of Greater Tucson. That's ReadySetVoteTucson.com. Get ready to vote.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them,
as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
This is John Trout. Catch me every weekday morning at 5 before Wake Up Tucson with America in the Morning. Breaking news, weather, politics, and sports on 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show and the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studio. Are you ready to take a little getaway? Only a 3-hour drive east of Tucson to a very different environment over by the Gila National Wilderness at Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Lots to do over there. And you will find all of those activities nicely articulated at southwestnewmexico.org. They're a great website. Also, some ideas on places to stay. It's a beautiful area of the land of enchantment. Let's go now on the live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Margaret Regan has been writing about the arts in Tucson for the Tucson Weekly for 32 years. She joins us now on the live line. Margaret, how are you?
Oh, pretty good. How are you?
Doing well. The big story is here in Tucson. And it's happening over at the University of Arizona Museum of Art.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. This is the biggest thing in the whole world.
This is a big deal.
Well, let's just say in this whole week.
Yeah,
the
week.
Yeah, I'm sure everybody remembers that our city lost a famous painting by Willem de Kooning way back in 1985. And it's a great story about the show. The woman ochre was the missing product, and several years ago it was recovered and it went off to California to get fixed up again. And this week, for the first time since 1985, people in Tucson can go to see this beautiful painting.
Yeah, the recovery was done in Silver City, and then the restoration at the Getty in Los Angeles.
Right.
And I guess this Thursday there'll be a special screening of a movie and they're going to do the screening at Centennial Hall on campus. Then the public display begins on Saturday.
Right, and I'm sure there's going to be all kinds of fun things happening that day. And they tell me at the museum that I'm so nervous. I'm telling you, I'm waiting for this baby.
I know. You're waiting. Your daughter's ready to deliver over in Texas,
right,
and you're very nervous.
We're just like, So
take a deep breath.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm sure she doesn't want to hear all this.
No.
But, they say that this show, this movie, is really interesting, super interesting. And because it's not the FBI, which would really not, they have not really said anything about who really did take this. This is a movie that can look at their own ideas. And so, anyways, they say it's really pretty funny, but very, you learn a lot, too.
Hey, I want a little bit of the backstory on this de Kooning painting, which, by the way, is just like off the charts. It's so valuable right now, and tens of millions of dollars. Who knows? There's been estimates maybe 150 million and up. It's just crazy how valuable this thing is. But from what I understand, the Gallagher family and the museum is named for Mr. Gallagher and their family. The Gallaghers donated this painting to the U of A, correct?
Yes, exactly. I think it was in the 1950s.
Mm-hmm.
I think that wasn't there a story that their son had died?
Yes.
And they gave paintings in their son's name and gave it to the university. So, we've had this painting and many others from the Gallagher family for many years. So it's, just really nice that it will be back and students can use it and everyone else can use it. So it's just such a wonderful story.
The Etherton Gallery, they had a very successful launch of their fall art season.
Yeah, they're doing great too. They're especially known for photography, and they now have at their gallery photography from Graciela Iturbide, who is a Mexican woman, very honored as a wonderful photographer, and she's in her 80s now. And they actually got her to come to town, and she gave a lecture, and they had an opening party. So some of us have missed that already, but the show, you know, the exhibition is going to be there for, let me see what my date is.
The show is up through November 26th at the Etherton Gallery, and they've got relatively new quarters in Barrio Viejo.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of people so far have not been there. And it's a very nice space and a very nice painting or a very nice piece, especially for the kind of photography that's in there now. A lot of stuff about Mexico. It's just really interesting things. And this woman is so productive, and I guess she's still working and still in good health. So it's really a nice thing, and it's really great. I guess she had never come to Tucson before to do anything like this, and so they were very happy.
A long time. I was going to say a long time ago, I saw a band, a Scottish band, Old Blind Dogs at the Burger Theater. We enjoyed that concert, and I see they're coming back October 14th.
Yes. Let's see. Yeah, they're going to be at the Burger Theater Company. And, you know, like so many other troupes, musical people, they haven't been here in several years. And they're a regular coming out here. Don Guest, you know, runs the In Concert thing. And he does all these Celtic musics, which, you know, I love very much. Mm-hmm. So anyway, he is beyond excited that it's coming back to town. And it's going to be next week. I guess that's next week, October 14th. Old Blind Dogs. And the Burger Theater is a great place to see a show because everybody can see, even small people like me.
Yeah, it's a very, very intimate atmosphere. And before we let you go and get back to the baby watch there with your daughter, a couple of anniversaries of note. MoCA, the Museum of Contemporary Art, celebrating their 25th anniversary this year.
Yes. How about that, right? Mm-hmm. Remember when it was in a sort of falling down garage?
I remember.
Yeah.
And then,
pretty fancy these days. Yeah.
Yeah, and then there's the 40th anniversary of Philibaum Glass Gallery.
Yeah, isn't that wonderful? 40th anniversary, you know, started, as we all know, by Tom Philibaum, and now being run by Allison Harvey, and she's doing a great job, and it'll be really nice. They're going to have some of the great glass people coming, and that is on October 15th.
Also of note, Ballet Tucson will have its first concert of the fall season. Now, they're going to be over at the Fox Theater. It's Footprints at the Fox. I don't know. I don't know if they've done that venue before. I don't know if that's one of their regular stops. I don't think so.
Well, just once a year. For this one show. They've done it for, I think, maybe 3-4 years.
Okay.
Of course, not during the pandemic, but it's really a fun show because it's the young dancers themselves creating the choreography and then teaching their new pieces to their friends, and you know, who also work in the company. So that's a really interesting thing, and it's very nice of the Ballet Tucson to help those young people get better and better.
Okay, and that's going to be it is an annual show. You're right, and it gives Ballet Tucson dancers the chance kind of try out their own choreography, try it on for size, and that will be October 7th, coming right up at the Fox. Yep. Okay, Margaret Regan of the Weekly.
Thank you for us,
We're going to let you get back at it. Good luck to your daughter, okay?
Okay, thanks so much.
All right, thanks a lot. Margaret Regan of the Tucson Weekly, look for her work in the Weekly, and she's rightly very nervous. Over there waiting for the baby, which the baby is due any moment, her daughter about to deliver. Hope all goes well. That's all goes well. I think we had a good show today. And we'll take a break right here with CBS Network News and Dave Ramsey's very popular show on money. On behalf of John on the other side of the glass, Bill Buckmaster saying, stay dry. Have a great afternoon.